Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the On The Box podcast, a television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. Jesus, I just realised how much of a mouthful that is. This week we are going to be covering the blockbuster Westworld, and I have two excellent guests to talk about this show with me. Firstly, the host of the Legends podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel is Mr. Joey Connors. How are you doing, Joey?
I'm doing well, Mr. Tandon. How about yourself?
Good, man, but I'm waiting for the next Legends pod. You do know this, you know?
I know. I have a job. I have two jobs.
writing for the comic pod.
Yeah, I run a business in real life, and then Gags makes me write, and then makes me do podcasts. But we do have two lined up, so.
Okay, beautiful. And also, we have a debut on the On The Box podcast. It's Mr. Mike Williams, a freelance writer who's written for the BBC, Yahoo, BuzzFeed, and Shortlist, and can currently be found at Metro. That's quite a list, Mike. Welcome
that
to the
is
show.
Indeed.
Welcome, mate.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
This is your
my
first,
debut.
Yeah, your first podcast, I take it, ever.
I know. I sort of did one many, many years ago, and I'd never ventured back, and now you've pulled me back into the fray. So
we'll count this as we'll count this as the first one. Well, believe me, it won't be your last one. So I've got my claws in you. You're pretty much ducked with an F.
Exactly.
Right. Anyway. So that's the intro's done. What we normally do on the box, people, is we go through the show spoiler-free. So we just talk about what we liked about it and all that good stuff. But firstly, this one, it's a HBO production. And you know what HBO are like. They love to promote these things to hell and back. What did you guys think of the build-up of this? Mike, you're new. Let's start with you. What did you think of the build-up of this? And what were you expecting from the show?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't really sure what to expect from it. I mean, I know it was based on a film, Westworld, from, I believe it was the 80s, which I hadn't seen. But I know it is loosely based upon that idea. All I knew was it was Jonathan Nolan writing it, who was obviously, he'd written a lot of Christopher Nolan films, Memento, The Prestige, The Dark Knight, and it was executively produced by J.J. Abrams, so I had relatively high hopes, and the trailers I'd seen looked really intriguing, interesting, and all I knew was the title Westworld, so it was obviously something to do with the Wild West, but I wasn't too sure exactly what it was about, so I really enjoyed that sort of build-up of sort of mystery until the first episode, and it obviously didn't disappoint.
Excellent. It was actually 1973 for the film, but there were two short-lived series in the 80s. Joey, what did you think then? What were you expecting? Because obviously they build this because they know Game of Thrones is going soon, don't they? So they were billing it as the next big thing.
Yeah, I think the first time I saw anything about it was actually in an E! Weekly magazine. They did a big thing on it, and I didn't hear of it before that. I started reading it, read the article, and you know, I've seen the people who are tied to it, Anthony Hopkins, and basically anything he's in, I'm going to watch. And then I started seeing trailers.
Ed Harris, too.
I mean, yeah, amazing. Brilliant actor. Yeah, and then I saw the trailer, and then I was totally hooked. And I hate Westerns. gags. You hate westerns too.
I will speak about that in a minute. Yeah, I hate
westerns. Yeah, so, but I saw science fiction, drama, thriller, and then I was in right then and there. And I, you know, short episodes, only 10 of them, but HBO doesn't swing and miss a whole lot. So I was hooked right away. As soon as I read that article, as soon as I saw the first trailer, I was in right off the bat.
Yeah, all the names you mentioned, they're fine, great, great people. I'm a nerd. I like Lost. I like Star Trek. I like Star Wars. J.J. Abrams' name was on this as well. So I was immediately just like, yep, okay, this is going to be decent. He doesn't normally do too much shit stuff. But like you said, the Nolans, someone like that's involved, you know straight away.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean, could you say the whole Lost thing, you know, Lost has been, I can't remember, I don't know how many years, it's been a long time since Lost was on. And I think TV has obviously gotten a lot better over the years, and it's definitely matching or even overtaking, obviously, film, because you can explore a lot more. It's basically the first show that has come along that has really replaced Lost for me in terms of the whole intrigue. And
that's a shout.
In terms of obviously being a J.J. Abrams exec production, it was something that just hooks you straight away, but also just throws so many questions at you without being able to process or understand what they mean, which is basically what Lost did throughout the whole duration of it, really.
You keep asking questions, don't you? It's like, wait another bit. What does that mean?
I love it. I mean, I didn't even, the first couple episodes, I didn't even know what was going on.
Yeah.
But as it unfolds, you gradually pick stuff up and, you know, it does start to make sense, and that's what I do like. But I also like just things being left unexplained, and or even right to the end, or even never explained, until you have to sort of piece things together yourself. And yeah, I think that's the first real sort of brain teasing series since Lost, even though Lost essentially didn't really make, well, didn't act, none of it really made sense
in the end.
Look to the end a lot. Yeah, exactly.
I loved it as well. It just was disappointing, and they built everyone so well, characters so well. And then, anyway, this isn't about Lost, so we'll do Lost. You know what? There you go. I've got him. I'm going to bring him back.
I did ask for it. I asked Gags for it.
So we can do Lost again. We can all get back together for Lost. But Joey, what did you think of spoiler-free talk then? What was the best things about this, without spoiling it for people? Why should they? Because obviously some people do listen to this and then go and watch shows as well, which is amazing. Because they listen to 10 minutes of it and then they go, so this is really important. Try and sell this show to somebody why you enjoyed it. Because I'm going to come with a couple of negatives as well. But go for it. You go first.
So try to sell the show to people who haven't seen it. Okay.
Yes.
So
yes.
Again, if you're into sci-fi, you're going to be into this right away. But two huge concepts in the show are ethics of artificial intelligence and the attainment of consciousness. So that brings a lot of different questions right out in the open. A lot of people, you know, AI could be a detriment to human beings 130, 40 years from now. So it depends on what you're into. If you're a guy or a girl who likes comedy, not going to like this. This brings intrigue, though. That's the hugest thing. You know, they sell it with the actors. We already talked about Anthony Hopkins. We talked about Ed Harris. But they really sell this show by just, you know, the immortality of informatics, things of this nature. So if you're into science, if you're into cybernetics, if you're into anything, I don't want to say geeky because that's the wrong word to use, but anything that makes your mind think, this is the show for you, because it's not a straightforward, you know, the Western plays a part in it, but it really doesn't play any outstanding part in the end. It's really, like I said, it's the ethics of artificial intelligence. Are you comfortable with playing God? And if you want to play God, and it's not about religion, it's just whatever religion you believe in or whoever you believe in, if you believe in a God, are you comfortable with playing God and then creating something? Because here's the problem with it.
Yeah,
we will
come back to this, Joe. You're going to go on your tangent, but that's a question for later. But I just think what you said about the Western, it is kind of a Western, because whatever the holiday, because what we're going to say is it's pretty much based on a kind of a theme park holiday home type place where people, rich people maybe, that go, you know, to spend time. And
I mean, it's essentially Jurassic Park.
As a Western.
The Westerns are Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I think if you hate Westerns, I wouldn't necessarily stay away from it, because the West, I mean, say being set in a Western town, there's so much more to it. It's, yes. I'd say it was more, and it's sci-fi drama.
You're right. And that's why I watched it in the end. Cause I, you know what? It would have put me off so bad that these guys weren't, you know, robots. Do you get what I mean? But what yeah. I found of it, I found it slow to start with. I thought that, if you're going to watch it for the first time, this is important. You must stick with it, because if you're like me, and these guys loved it, so they enjoyed it from the start and off on the off, and Mike's already pointed out that you still don't know what's going on, even though you're 3-4 episodes in, you're still asking loads of questions. But they do get answered really well, by the way, so we'll get to that. But 3 episodes in, I switched off. I actually switched off and I said, I don't want to watch this now. And what brought me back in was the word of mouth on Twitter. That is what got me back in. So basically what I'd say is, don't be as impatient as me. Is what I'd say. But also, I have a question for you both. So Mike, does this, this is something that I spoke to Rory about. Rory's a podcaster for us and co-host of the Comic Pod. He basically asked, does it try to be too clever? Does this show try to be too clever? And could too many plot twists turn off an audience?
Well, as you were saying, the first couple episodes, I wasn't sure whether it was just me that really didn't follow anything. And I was putting out a few tweets just to kind of, you know, get some feelers out there just to see if I was not alone. And some people understood the vibe of it. Some, I don't know if I just was reading too much into it and sort of going off on tangents and thinking, well, how is this happening, you know, logistic-wise. Obviously, I won't get into it, I'm too spoilery now, but just logistics of it all and how it really worked, and I say when and where it was set, and there was a lot of questions. But I remember when it was on, I was doing weekly reviews of it, so I sort of had to be watching it. But I totally agree. The first couple episodes, I would come away from it. I come away interested and intrigued by what was going to come up. And what was going to happen to the characters and how they were going to evolve. But I didn't feel satisfied that I'd really learn anything. But at the end of the day, it's written by Jonathan Nolan, and I trust him as a writer to take us at least somewhere. And bear in mind, it is 10 episodes long. The final episode was about an hour and a half, and every episode before that was about an hour.
Yeah, it was
so
a
you
movie.
Had over, it was a movie at the end. Exactly. You had over 10 hours worth. So if they bar the first couple hours, you had still the 8.5-ish hours. So it wasn't like you only had 2 or 3 episodes that potentially wouldn't satisfy your need for finding any sort of resolution. And as I say, as it got, I think, to the halfway point, it did start to really open up. It's when big things start to happen, about 4 or 5 episodes in, maybe. But yeah, I would definitely say you have to stay with it.
I think episode 5 was a biggie, where you just started to think, okay, things are going on now. And, you know, I actually did go back and think, wow, okay, 5, you've got me now. I want to know
the thing is.
You know,
so when big things do happen, it's the payoff is so worth it.
Yeah.
You can think, exactly. I didn't really get much out of the first few episodes, but when those things start happening, when the plot develops to that next level, it's like, it's arguably, you know, one of the best shows in years,
yeah,
because of how it pans
out. Some
shows
don't do that, do they? Some shows just leave you hanging for fucking 10 episodes. You're like, oh, come on. Joey, what would you think then about this? Do you think it was trying to be too clever?
I don't think it was trying to be too clever. I think there was so much going on and so many characters, but that's what they were trying to do in the first few episodes, is introduce you to everybody. And then they did a fantastic job in the 7, again, that's only 7 episodes, but they did after the first 3, obviously, did a fantastic job of tying it all in. I don't mind a slow burn, because and now a lot of that faith is probably because it's an HBO show. So I knew at the end, I'm like, you know what, these guys, like I said earlier, just don't swing and miss much. So I'm like, yeah, I don't mind it. Introduce me to all the characters. Like, I want to know William. I want to know who Logan is. Tell me more about Teddy and Dolores. Tell me more about the Man in Black, Teresa, Delos Company. Like, that, they were trying to really get that stuff across, because if you didn't get it across in the beginning and then they just threw that in at the end, I think a lot of people would have been aggravated. So I like the way that they did it. I mean, Jonathan Nolan is really good. But again,
that's a good point. Not many people will know, or some people just want to watch TV for the sake of it, so they don't have the knowledge like you guys have just talked about, or we have, in terms of who the writers are, who's behind it. They won't have any of this knowledge, so if they're just watching it as watching TV, some people do. Not everybody's a geek, are they? it will take a couple of episodes to get in, so they have to have the patience. But if you're still listening and you haven't seen this show and you want to watch it, I'd go now, because we're going to get into the crux of spoiling this. We've done 15 minutes now without spoiling it. So, Joey, are you ready for this?
Yeah, man.
Good man, because I know you love this. Yeah, man. So before we do, though, there is something that I read up on this show that it's been hailed as the biggest debut HBO show ever. Views wise, it's been watched the most. I think they averaged 12 million, a million viewers, basically. That is mental. That is mental, because Game of Thrones does like that, or maybe just a bit above that. So 14, 15 million. But to get to 12 in your first year and to get that type of intrigue, it tells you that they've done something right. Many shows don't get there. Many bomb. So I don't really want to bring any more stats or facts into it more than that, because that's a pretty huge deal, Joey, that it's that big in its debut season.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously incredibly impressive. But again, when you have, if this show was on TBS, nobody would probably pay it any mind. It's because it has HBO behind it. Anthony Hopkins takes a lot of money for anything he does. And you see him on there, and so you know they're going no holds bar here. It doesn't matter. Everything's on the table. I mean, it was just, the show is fantastic. It's 10 episodes of just perfection. I know people will point out, well, it was a slow burn, but it had to be that way. You can't just come out like the end was all guns blazing. If you would have did that in the middle of it, it would have took away from the whole series. This thing was just huge, and it had a build. It had a huge build. And then these more trailers. I mean, I remember talking about it with my friends. I don't usually talk to my friends in the United States about TV all that much, which sounds weird to you guys. We usually talk sports here, but we were talking about this show, and I'm like, I can't wait for it. Like, this is, I'm pumped for this. So, you know, it comes out in October, and it was just like, okay, like this is what I was looking for.
Mad. And Mike, any thoughts on the ratings wise and how many people watch this?
I think it's interesting to obviously, I didn't know that it was the highest. Was it the highest debut?
Highest debut on HBO. So that means it did better than Game of Thrones season one.
I mean, to be fair with Game of Thrones, even when that first came out, I didn't watch it right from the beginning. I caught up, I think, after the first season. And I might have been out with a lot of people if, obviously, no one really knew what it was about. And obviously, people have read the books, but obviously, Game of Thrones today is obviously sort of a global phenomenon to what it was in the first season. But I also find it interesting that, you know, whether it's a trend of HBO seasons, I found first season of Game of Thrones quite, I mean, apart from a few big moments, fairly slow and quite, you know, took a bit of time to get into, I thought. And it's the same sort of build up with Westworld, but I think we're at a different point now. Obviously, six, seven years on from the beginning of Game of Thrones, TV has really sort of upped its game. I think when you see stuff like True Detective, really like impressing people, and obviously Game of Thrones getting better, I think people were expecting something from HBO. And plus, it has got a really good cast. Obviously, you've got Jeffrey Wright, you've got James Marsden, Tandy Newton, Evan Rachel Wood, Ed Harris, and obviously Anthony Hopkins sort of spearheading it. It is, as you say, almost like it's a film cast over a series. And I think that is another draw to people, just the sheer quality of the cast and where TV is at today. So, no, I guess I'm not surprised that it did so well ratings-wise.
Yeah, final numbers, reviews-wise, TV.com gave it a 9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes have it at 89%. IMDb at 9 out of 10. So,
wow.
Basically, all-round magnificent numbers and reviews and ratings and views. And so, yes, that is the end of the spoiler-friendly section. We are going to go into the show. So, basically, fave characters. We're not going to talk story too much, because I reckon it'll get covered whilst we're going through it, and you've done a good job of building it up as well, guys. So, Mike, if your favourite one character first, and we'll switch it around then.
It is tough to choose from, but I think Bernard was my favourite. I thought he had the most interesting character arc. Bear in mind, there were a number of other characters who could easily get that vote. But I thought, because Jeffrey Wright is a very good actor, I'm a fan of his work, and you know, enjoyed him in Source Code, Casino Royale, and a number of the films he's been in where he stands out. And I think potentially had the most challenging role, especially when his character starts to become conflicted and very unsure of himself and paranoid. And when he is at that stage of discovering who he really is, I just think he does a really good job at it.
There's a scene. Is it Maeve, is it?
Yeah, that's Tandy Newton.
The scene when she controls him and he's about to switch her off or something, and then she stops him from doing anything. And then when he's walking out of that room in shock, like, you could just... It just looks so real. He sold it, didn't he?
He
was brilliant in that scene, I thought. Just like, he just couldn't believe that he was a robot. You know?
The moment he finds out is the moment we have that realization. Whether people will have potentially picked up on it before the big reveals, or whether they've been theorizing it beforehand, when he finds out and you're there with him, you do sort of go through the motions with him. And it's interesting. It's, you know, the irony of actually feeling that with him, even though he is a robot. But yeah, I thought it's very interesting the way his character pans out and how it develops.
Arnold did his job well. Anyway.
He did.
Mr. Connors, did you have anything to add on Bernard? Because obviously I know you liked him too.
Oh, he was an awesome character. Are we going in a twist quite yet, or are we going to wait for that?
No, we'll hold a twist. We've got a section for
okay,
those.
So, yeah, I mean, he was... It's hard for me to really say anything else until we get to the twist about him. Mike kind of covered it all there. But, yeah, he was an awesome character. It was played... I mean, he was so good. Played perfectly. The right-hand man of Dr. Ford, he played that role great. And when we get the twist, we'll find out why.
Okay, your next then, your favorite, one of your favorites then, Joey?
One of my favorites, and there's quite a bit of them, which is...
That's okay. Go through as many as we can.
Yeah, so I'll start with Dolores. Dolores Abernathy, who's played by Evan Rachel Wood, the oldest working host in the park. Her story and her transformation from the season, or from episode 1 to episode 10, is something like I've never seen before. And there's one scene I wanted to point out, which just kind of makes it like all come together for me. Do you guys remember the scene where she's speaking to herself, like she's facing herself?
Yes.
And then on one side, she's wearing the cowgirl and jeans, and then she's in the blue dress lady.
She looked hot in that, by the way.
Yeah, she did. She looked very...
Wow.
Yeah. Gags had to throw that in.
Human beings, come on.
Yeah, so she's in the scene where they're in the basement of the church, and then... She thinks she's speaking to Arnold. Instead, she realizes that that's her true self. That was really, really cool. Like, she realizes right then and there the amount of suffering, that everything up until that point, what's going on. And that was, to me, that was like, oh, okay. Like, emergence of conscience. That's the, again, talked about it already. That's one of the huge themes. And her character was just amazing. I mean, the first episode, she, you know, with Teddy and the Man in Black, kills Teddy and then rapes her. I mean, she goes from that, like damsel in distress, to badass girl. Like, I'm a sucker for that. So
her transformation and her how she evolved, the character evolved, is amazing. Because I wasn't really much of a fan of her original character, you know, the damsel in distress and all that.
Me either.
I was just like, oh, come on, just man up, woman, you know? Like, I was just like, come on, just slap him one back. Just do it. But obviously,
she
they're robots.
Quite bland, wasn't she?
She was.
Very traditionally sort of the damsel in distress. And I thought it was interesting the way her character arc really developed, and completely by the end of it, say she was completely opposite. She was like the kind of the kick-ass, like, action-y, violent hero, say going from that point where she was a victim in the first episode, and it was obviously quite horrific to see, and it was the point where she then obviously keeps waking up each morning, and you think, is this just her monotonous same existence? And then when she starts to remember things, and then everything just sort of opens up for her. I think that's really fascinating, the way to do that with her.
She was even a little bit of damsel in the last episode until she then just wakes up and kicks Man in Black's ass.
Yes. Like, just busted him, didn't she?
Oh my god, it was brilliant. It's just, you were actually cheering. It was like, you know when you watch Rocky when you're a kid and you just want him to beat the person up? You were just like, yeah, kick his head in. Yeah, you know, just, it was one of those moments. And if a TV show can do that to you, right? Anything, actually anything, any bit of art, TV, play, theatre, if it can get something going inside you, it's done what it's supposed to. It's a success. Yeah. And that's why I always think, if something moves me, something gets me riled up, something makes me angry, we covered, what was that documentary on Netflix? Making a Murderer. That Making made murder. Me throw things at the TV. You know, it's unbelievable television. So that's what I like. Anyway, Dolores Dunn. Mike, who would you say was next on the list for you that you really, really thought was an intriguing character?
Interesting. I mean, those two characters we discussed are arguably the best, but then, I mean, Tandy Newton's Maeve.
Just
another really interesting character.
Great
sort of like the.
As well.
Exactly. I think the beauty of the show is there's such a diverse range of performances and character arcs. You know, Maeve is she's the in charge of the tavern or where basically. Yes, exactly.
Say it as it is.
Yeah.
This is not a PG show. You can talk, you can swear, you can do whatever you want.
I love the tavern.
Bear that in mind. I don't know where I got tavern from. I don't know. Anyway. But yes, she's, I mean, her character again starts off fairly slowly and it sort of very gradually unfolds as, you know, she again starts to realize something is, you know, isn't quite right with her. And the whole self isn't quite right. And I just think, especially the way her character pans out and becomes this kind of, I wouldn't quite say evil, but the fact that she basically becomes like a killer because she is hell-bent on escaping is just fascinating, the layers to her character. Because essentially she's grieving because in a previous storyline she's lost her child. She's now in this... whorehouse, I'll go with.
Nice.
And
much better, Mike.
Thank you. And in a completely different setup now, but with horrible flashbacks of having her child being murdered, with this insatiable lust to escape from where she is. And obviously she gets to that point where she can wake up in the labs, and it spirals quite dramatically the way she manages to manipulate these weak scientists. But I think her, more than anyone, there's a lot more to see from her, especially where she ends up at the end. It's like you're left not quite knowing her fate, really. I think she can be quite influential, I think, in the follow-up season.
Yeah, she kind of becomes like the leader, doesn't she, of the resistance,
the rebellion,
the rebellion, let's go Star Wars, whatever. but basically, I just think that she was the first one, more than Dolores, because Dolores is really the one who's the main, you know, the one that they wanted to a kind of what it comes across to me is the main AI, the main robot, the main one that's going to go on to become a leader or whatever. But I thought Maeve was. The way they played it out, she was the catalyst for it all. It looked like she was more stronger. I thought she had a stronger personality from the start, even though, like you said, she was like, you know, this grieving mom. But I found that she was really strong. She had this role, whatever the role plays, she had a role of a strong bitch, you know, as well. She was quite bitchy and catty, and she was a stronger personality, I found. And Joey, would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, she was, I mean, if you're in a brothel, you have to be pretty tough off the bat, but,
that's
yeah, you know, I mean, like, you're not going to take shit from men, you know, like, most men go in there, and she was the leader of the brothel, so, and you see her, like, you see her awakening happening almost every episode, and you're going, wait a minute, is she realizing who she is? Like, what's going on here? So, yeah, I do agree with you there. She is kind of, before Dolores, the first one who kind of sees, and obviously, Mike, you talked about the ending where, you know, she's on that train and she's ready to find out what her destiny is. And then, of course, we'll get to why that changes. But yeah, I thought her character was awesome.
I do wonder, I want to ask a really weird question here, right? I do wonder how they shot some of these, like, as in how uncomfortable you could, because when they go back, you know, to the headquarters or whatever, when they've got to be stitched up and they're just sitting there naked and they, you know, Anthony Hopkins is holding Dolores' hand or talking to Maeve or Bernard is talking to Maeve, whatever. And they're just sitting there naked. Like, if it's a normal film, like Game of Thrones, you know, they're having sex or whatever. You know, it's like some bits are covered up, whatever, but they're just sitting there naked. And I did think to myself, I always think, how did they shoot that? How uncomfortable must one of them be just sitting there
naked? It is a weird kind of,
It was, wasn't it? Like, when you think of it, you watch it and you go, that's dead weird.
Well, because they're turned off. Like, there's
no
movement.
I know that, dude, but it's in your real life. So it's still a real person, right? It's not a robot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They make it look perfect. Yeah, it's just awesome acting.
The acting was fantastic. I have to agree with you. It was just another point in my mind. I just thought, when I was watching it, I was like, wow, that to shoot this, it must have been something. You know, because how many retakes...
Just would guys went right back to sex, thinking of Maeve's body.
Oh no! It was just a funny thing. But Joey, then next, Anthony Hopkins, I mean the main man really in this. I thought in times, you know, he's so much. So he's the pivotal one.
Yeah, I mean he's the founder and creator of director of Westworld, and frankly, he's the puppet behind everything. They couldn't have found anybody better to act that out. He just destroyed that character in a good way, and the ending is fitting. You don't need him for a season two. He got the ball started on the, what did we call it, the rebellion, if we're going by Star Wars.
Might as well, we love Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. So he was just brilliant. I mean, his acting is always brilliant, but the way that he, you know, he found out that they were stealing basically his information and technology. And, you know, what he does with Bernard, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to talk about that yet, so I'm trying to be coy about that. You know, all the little things he does to cover his tracks and future stuff to cover his tracks. He has the whole thing planned out.
Go for it, Joey.
10 episodes.
Go for it.
So,
we could get off now, yeah.
So, okay, so basically, Dr. Ford, it's basically his ultimate plan. Bernard... Lo is Arnold Weber. Arnold Weber was the first. Him and Dr. Ford started this, and he uploaded his, Arnold Weber, his former partner's memory, everything into Bernard Lo, and that's an anagram: Bernard Lo and Arnold Weber. Which there was a lot of theories. I figured that out, but I'm sure it was much after everybody else did. But I'm like, wait a minute, you know, weird like that, and sometimes when I'm watching things, I jot down notes.
I didn't even figure it out, dude, until...
Oh, really?
I swear. Don't worry.
And that's,
don't feel bad. The dumb one's sitting here.
So, you know, he covers his tracks with that. With Bernardi, you didn't know Bernard was a robot. I mean, he played it off so perfectly. And at the end, you know, Delos is kind of basically kicking him out. You know, they don't want him in there anymore. And instead of, okay, I'm going to step down, you know, no big deal. He actually has, like we talked about Maeve, her whole awakening is just him programming her, which is kind of, it's disturbing, but it's sad in a way because you're like, oh man, she finally figured this out. I don't know how she did it. Maybe Ford programmed the whole thing. He staged the whole thing, just like he staged Dolores killing him at the end. And that was the icing on the cake there, because he knew damn well, you know, he's finishing up the Westworld act and Teddy and Dolores' scene. And don't you know, he goes on, it's basically, you know, like a spotlight right on the stage, perfect kind of ending. he starts talking, and I don't remember the exact words he says. I wish I do now, but I'm mad that I don't. But he gets Dolores to kill him, so he's dead, and then Dolores turns the gun on all those dumbass people who use these robots as their play toys, which is just awesome. It was so cool to see that.
I have a theory about this. I don't know whether you agree or not, but we'll do that in a second. Mike, your thoughts on Anthony Hopkins and his role as Dr. Ford, is it? Yes.
Well, regardless of him being the key mind behind Westworld as it stands, I still found a lot of he kind of played to me a background role, but it was a very significant role. I'm actually just discussing about him how he was very manipulative, and what I noticed about him is he was always one step ahead of everyone. As you say, he was the key programmer. He knew what was going on, but he also knew that the investors and the people that come in to work underneath him were also trying to get him out. And because he knew that, he was always a couple of steps ahead. And that's what I found so interesting about the character. As soon as you thought he'd been rumbled or someone had, you know, backed him into a corner, he always seemed to have an escape plan, which is another point we can obviously discuss about the ending, because I think there's a few different ways you can read how that all tied up and sort of what his intentions were.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I mean, as Joey was saying, he staged his death. Well, I mean, if you look at it on sort of face value, he was killed. But then you obviously, knowing Ford, I've been thinking about the time, and it wouldn't be obviously any stretch of the imagination to think that he'd obviously staged his death intentionally, whether that wasn't even him who was killed. And
you nicked my point, damn it. It's fine. My theory is, whilst you're there, my theory is that it's not even him. It's a clone.
Exactly.
Because
I think, yeah.
Where he went down and where Bernard was with him, there was loads of machines. Mm-hmm. If you go watch where he created Bernard, and out of everybody's, you know, eyes and stuff, he could have created himself. Why not? And that's why his hair is different in a lot of the scenes, you know. There's little bits that are different. You don't know whether it might be a clone or it might be the real one. And so, you know, I just think, and obviously, when he's walking all when he's actually in Westworld, is that actually him or is that the clone, you know?
Interesting.
It's so weird. There was times where I watched it back a little bit today and I've thought, is that him or is that a clone? I do not think, and I know he's put it on Twitter that it was great working with the cast, but it's that they, you know, production and people behind the thingy scenes always love to have a surprise in a show, and this show now doesn't need any build, so having his name on it will do nothing, you know, but having the shock value of him turning up in episode 3 or something of season 2, and as the real guy, and I think it adds much more shock value, so I think there may be something to it that it was, I think he's too clever.
I just think it's too obvious. Okay? In terms of everything we've seen throughout the show, the twists, the paranoia, that it would be too obvious for him to have just be dead at the end. I think I picked up on several occasions that Westworld is his life, and he did not want to be pushed out of it. And to kind of move on and expand from the theory of that being a robot, and he was sort of off in a safe place. I mean, essentially, you see all these, which I presume all the people there, they were investors, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
At least special guest investors. Basically, to me, it looks like he sent a clone of himself to look like he'd been killed, and basically all the investors get killed. So essentially, he then takes back control of the park and remains with his hand on the button, so to speak, and it kind of resets all that power struggle.
Yeah,
and he's there again, one step ahead of everyone, as has been the entire season. To me, that would make a more fitting conclusion to the series, based on how we'd seen him sort of double cross or outsmart, outmaneuver everyone, because he essentially is the king of Westworld, and is the god of Westworld, isn't he?
And that was one of my twists as well, that him dying was a major twist for me, that I just was shocked that, whoa, this is Anthony Hopkins? This is like killing Ned, you know? Like, what's going on? Right, you know, it was like, what the hell? So, you know, for me, it was a big deal. So I do think there might be something with it. But who knows? If they don't go that way, even better, because they've made us second guess it. And when a show, like I said, makes you do shit like this, it's brilliant. Speaking of investors, and we're doing twists and characterizers mixed together now because it makes more sense. And this flows better. Mike, William and the Man in Black.
Exactly. I mean, I think, whether you guys read up or looked on sort of internet forums or talked to people about what was happening in the show, that by the time the reveal, which is in the final episode, it's the final episode we have basically William revealed as the Man in Black. There's a very obvious transition where he's explaining to Dolores, you know, who William is and what he's been through, and then we get that very obvious reveal. But before that, one or two episodes beforehand, I'd been speaking to people. There'd been theories going around on the internet, and I was quite open to the idea. I mean, when I heard about it, I was like, whoa, this is huge, because it obviously reveals the timelines and just kind of blows everything wide open. So when it actually happened, I wasn't actually as shocked as I should have been, because I'd already heard about it. I'd already bought into the idea. Because it does make sense if you pay attention to the few episodes before. They're just very subtle hints that you can conceivably think, okay, well, this is that twist. I mean, I feel a bit annoyed that I found out potentially beforehand that could have happened.
I'm so glad I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have had, it still had impact.
Yeah, I watched episode 9 just now, and like you just said, there's a massive hint when she walks. Is it in the church that they're in? That they go down in. So she's walking out the church, and she's like walking out, and someone's at the door, and she says, "William," and the door opens, and it's a Man in Black, and her face just changes, and then the episode ends. So it's kind of like that's a big hint, but no one would guess that until you watch back. You know, again,
in hindsight, it's easy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a brilliant, brilliantly done. Joey, go on. Sorry, Mike, did you have anything else to say on this?
No, I think I'd pretty much...
great. Joey, go for it. This is a big one for you as well.
Yeah, I kind of am in this Mike's boat here, because it was ruined for me, because...
Damn it.
There are some people who watch TV and they can see everything.
Yeah.
And I seen that theory floating out, I think, like 2 episodes in.
That's quite early.
Yeah, and I saw the... I saw that and I'm like, damn, I didn't even, how do you guys pick up on that so fast? But yeah, I mean, it was really cool. He was a young man, and you see the difference in him. Like when he first got there with his friend Logan, he didn't even really want to be there. You know, he didn't think it was for him. He was just going because his buddy.
He was fucking annoying. He was fucking annoying. Let's call a spade a spade. Him and Dolores just annoyed the shit out of me.
Yeah, big time. He really was. Well, he didn't want to have any fun.
You're getting married.
Just, you know.
You're getting married outside of the fucking thing, and now you're losing it. The whole story for me about William. The whole story for me about William is he loses his mind.
Yeah.
He gets consumed by
this obsession.
It just goes mental, and well, that's the beauty.
He goes mental about the maze. That's what he ends up, you know, he thinks he has the whole thing figured out. And then the maze is, what does Dr. Ford tell him? The maze isn't meant for you.
Yeah.
Which was just a great line. And then you find out I jumped right into the maze. I wanted to make sure we talked about it.
It's brilliant.
But it symbolizes the robot's attainment of consciousness, and all them years he tried to figure out what that was, and it was never for him.
So how many years? That's like what? Like what question I would ask myself, for example, and this guy's gone out. Like he's basically killed off his brother-in-law, then who might turn up with some big beard next season? You know, hiding somewhere
on the back of a horse. Still.
Well, he's on the back of a horse, or he's in Park 75, right?
With a crazy sunburn.
Which we're going to get to in a minute. But basically, he's in some other park and he's got another life. But the thing is, how has this guy done this? How has he gone out, built a company, then still spent what seems like an eternity in a make-believe world park. I mean, he owns it, but some of it just... I would like them to go into a bit more of, you know, some kind of flashbacks of his life, if possible, to fill in some gaps there. Because I think it's kind of like, what the fuck? Like, this doesn't even make any sense. This is for reality, this guy's done this. Like, come on. It's a bit hard to believe that someone gets that obsessed by something. For me.
It's true. I mean, the thing that kind of... I don't know if you guys ever watched It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. It's one of my favorite shows. And it's where I'm from.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Because obviously Jimmy Simpson was in that as a McPoyle. But yeah, I mean, as a really weird character in that. So I thought, especially when I first saw him in this, it was a bit hard to actually get on board with this is a normal guy. This is a serious character he's playing. But really quickly, he managed to convince me. And I say, I mean, there's plenty of really interesting character arcs with all the other characters we discussed. But Williams is, I mean, arguably the most shocking, I think.
Yeah, we talked about evolving Dolores. This guy, this is a turn, you know, this is like some kind of psycho shit. But basically, oh, yeah. What happened with him was the first turn for him, I think it was episode 5, where they went to steal that nitro, was it? Is it nitrogen? Mm-hmm. The explosives? And yes, when he needs to save her, and then he just shoots everyone. He just shoots all three of them, kills them all, and like, you know, Logan, by the way, we haven't talked to Logan, but Logan, who's his brother-in-law, just goes ape shit. This is why we're here, man. Yes, get it. Fucking hell. Because what you forget and what we haven't put across is that this park is basically to come and kill people or to get a fuck. That is pretty much what people come to
live
do
out
there.
Your fantasies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly
however
right.
You deem your, whatever your fantasy may be.
And that's
I think
mental.
The fee was, what, $40,000 for each person, if I remember correctly? That was the fee
it's
to go to the park?
Place. Yeah, it's a rich thing. Yeah. So not everyone in the world knows about it, which is why Maeve's maybe being sent out to leave the intel out there, you know, so people find out about it. But so, I mean, again, then William, for me, I just couldn't take to him until the seriousness came in and he started to then become a bit of a badass. And that's where the evolving, and I loved the timeline stuff. This is the type of shit that Lost was doing, you know, where you're just in two places at once and there's shit going on. You're like, what the fuck, you know, is going on here? But once it all came together and it all made sense and all these characters are from the past and they're discontinued now, maybe you don't see much of them. And it just like all made sense then. Because obviously there's quite a lot of characters that William and Logan and Dolores bump into, don't they? And to go through all their story arc. It's mental. So, but none of them are there on the other side where Anthony Hopkins is, you know, and the man in black, as his name's William, but none of them are there in those. But it feels like they are all in the same. And I think what that shows is that this is a very slick, very slick show, very well produced, very well directed. It is, you know, high quality stuff. I know people people predicted it and people got it right, but for someone who wasn't talking to other people about it and watching it on his own, I was in a, you know, I didn't speak to people about this at all and watched it episode
by wish
episode.
I'd done the same.
I did not not pick it until the end, and when I found out, I was like, you just made the fucking show. That was what I thought. Immediately I thought, this is one of the best shows I've seen. Because it doesn't matter that I didn't know what the fuck was going on for 8 episodes. But when it hit hard and everything else just fell into place. And it makes the show. It just does. So, I don't know. I don't think anyone could give it any more praise than that, to be honest. But
exactly. I think the way that it actually managed to mask that there were two timelines set in the same location for so long before people then started to kind of theorize, oh, is this the same? Is this the same room, but just in a different 50, whatever years apart? And to me, that's like such a great, great mind that's behind it. I mean, obviously, you know, many minds behind it, but in terms of how it was written, how it was set up, how it basically manipulated you and kept you from certain things, and I just think it was really great when the theories came out, I was still like, holy shit, is this could this be possible? And then when it is realized in the show, it's still a powerful thing to experience. I think nothing, I mean, what Game of Thrones will throw in deaths as their sort of staple for shocking you. I've not really seen any other shows in a long time that have really like shocked me so much in terms of how cleverly the plot twists were and how well concealed they were, basically.
That's such a good point. Basically, you are watching Game of Thrones scared that one of your favourites doesn't die. That is the fear they've put into you, which is such a beautiful thing of a TV show. But Joey, what did you... I mean, you guys, neither of you mentioned this, but what did you think of Teresa's death? Were you a bit shocked by that? Because I was when she died.
I was until she started snooping and... the big thing was is when she tried to the power struggle.
Yeah,
you know damn well yes. Anthony Hopkins wasn't going to allow that to happen. So the way she died, I thought was shocking, and Bernard killing her, which was just brutal because Anthony Hopkins is just coaching him along and going, "Now Bernard, kill her." So it was like, whoa, okay, like to have that kind of power. I mean, you can look at it two ways. It's got to be frightening, and it's got to be really cool, depending on what spectrum you fall on. I mean, I wasn't shocked by her death. I kind of had a feeling she was going to die, just not that way.
Yeah, it was the manner, wasn't it? That twist of learning, you know, why Bernard was going to do it and who he really was. And as you say, I think that distinction of Ford, whether he is this, you know, worshipable god or a fearful sort of, well, a god again, but in terms of each end of the spectrum, there's like, is he this deranged, power hungry man who is basically can control people by, you know, pressing buttons on a PDA and giving them verbal orders, or is he a genius that we should look up to and not want to piss off, basically, because he will get someone to kill you?
Ed, by the way, we didn't say Ed Harris as the Man in Black was Sue fucking Perb. We didn't give him any praise there. I just want to say that. But the whole cast was good. I also thought Bernard, when he actually went through his history in his head, I thought the acting there was fantastic. And then he learns, doesn't he, that he's Arnold.
Oh, it's so sad.
The whole of that bit was just like, oh, shit. And then he realizes that he abducted the other girl. What was her name? Oh, God. The one who's... who works with him?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Elsie, that's it. And she's apparently Elsie. That's right. It's Elsie. Yeah.
Okay.
It is Elsie.
Because it was weird with her because it was before you really knew what was quite going on. You thought, okay, someone's abducted her. You thought, okay, maybe it's Arnold. He's hiding in Westworld somewhere, possibly. But she was like, I mean, you just basically saw her getting sort of abducted from behind. You never saw her getting killed. And I always thought, is she going to come back? Is there something more to play on there? But you never saw anything. Whether she will return in the next one, because
I think she is. I've been watching a few recap shows on YouTube, and they've showed that HBO have released some kind of teaser where she's paging in, going, "Hello, anybody there? Hello, hello."
Interesting.
So I think she's coming back as well in season two. She's not died.
You know, the other weird part is. At the end, like we know there was a big rebellion. The only thing I couldn't figure out at the end is, why was the Hemsworth brother, Ashley Stubbs, he's the head of security. Where was he at during this whole thing? Why people are fighting each other. You're the head of security and there's guns firing. And where are you at? You're nowhere to be found.
All hell broke breaks.
I couldn't understand that. It was like, what the hell? Where is he? So I don't know what happened with him either.
Maybe he is also...
Oh. A robot or an artificial intelligence. Well, it could be.
Everything's open now. The whole beautiful thing is that they're infiltrated. Anthony Hopkins is going to keep himself protected, it looks like. You know, Dr. Ford is going to protect himself. Having a robot as head of security is probably the best way to control, to have security controls for, you know, for your own well-being. You never know. There's so much open. That's again the beauty of it. But okay, the last thing I wanted to talk about was SW. No, it's not SeaWorld. It was, I think they're going to call it Samurai World. I'm not sure. But that was another one of the parks. I dropped a bit of a, you know, a little hint in there about Park 75, but apparently there's more parks. And Mike, what do you think? They did have some kind of samurai outfits for the next, you know, for they were showing some more AI, you know, some more hosts, as they call them, with samurai type stuff going on. So do you reckon it would be a samurai world?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, obviously it was a big sort of reveal right near the end as they were, as that small group were trying to escape, and we saw samurai in the facility, and it, and yeah, there was something text that revealed there was a, yeah, another park for them. And it basically opens up the idea of, well, how many parks are there? I mean, it's weird to actually think where these parks are. I mean, is it an underground facility where this is, and it's sort of artificial light? Because essentially where Westworld is, it's like the size of a state, isn't it? So where, or, you know, a small state potentially, where have they found this space on Earth to make Westworld, and where therefore have they made Samurai World? And I'm presuming they've got more than two parks. If they've obviously numbered them 75, they may have failed ones, they may have other ones. I mean, I just don't know the extent of where it could lead is obviously, yeah, to Samurai World, which you'd think would be a logical step forward, having been exposed to the samurai in the labs. But I mean, it just opens up a completely open-ended narrative to potentially dipping in and out of different parks, and what other parks have they got? I mean, yeah, it's fascinating, to be honest.
I mean, Westworld doesn't seem to fucking end. It's like Red Dead fucking Redemption at times. It's just like you can just keep going in a horse forever. It's like, what the fuck's going on? Like, come on.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, they never explain where the fuck is the park located.
Exactly.
Like, it's all made up. They do that, like, Inception-type thing. Remember when Ford's talking to, I can't remember, the woman, Gags, you said her name earlier, the one who got killed.
Teresa.
Yeah, he's having a conversation with her, and in the background, there's like build destroyers out there knocking the whole landscape down. So I'm not sure like
building
how they
a
did
new
that.
Park, yeah, building a new
yeah,
park.
Remember what they were doing?
It was mental.
Yeah, remember the other time when he had her in the situation where she went on vacation as a little girl, and he replicated that whole scene.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he does that, and I don't know where the park is. That's the
other thing. No, exactly.
You know what I used to, you know when I first watched it, right, where they didn't explain, like, the trains and all this, they had the big, they're looking down at a, what do they look at in the
It's control? Like a hologram. It's like
is it a hologram?
Map,
it's like
it?
A hologram.
Like a 3D.
Yeah. Something you see on Star Wars. Yeah, like
I just thought, well, is this virtual reality or something?
That's what I thought as well.
Because the first thing I thought was virtual, and I was like, whoa, this is weird. So, but as you say, it's a physical fucking place. It's mental to think about. It does mind fuck you. If there's like, because obviously the piece of paper that Maeve had was Park 1, section da 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 da. So, obviously, then it opens up, right, Park 1. So there's got to be more, and then you see Samurai World or whatever it's going to be, SW. This show could go on for fucking ever. They could just show a new area every year if they wanted to. But the other thing this must take a long time to produce, because it's not out till 2018, the next one.
Mm. Yeah, I know. Well, so they said it cost a lot of money too, so that was the other reason for it.
Yeah. They crammed in a lot in 10 episodes, which is good, to be fair. Okay, so is there any other twists that you guys think we've missed, Joey?
Yeah, I want to bring up, and some people who listen to this may I'm not doing this to be offensive. I just think they're questions that should be asked. And basically, when you're dealing with AI, artificial intelligence...
Oh, damn, I thought you could say Anfield Index 2, mate.
When you're dealing with Anfield Index 2, sometimes you run into personalities who are a pain in your ass, guys. No, I'm just kidding. So, here's the thing. Is it okay to play God as a human? Because that's essentially what Dr. Ford's doing. Is it okay to do that? So... Should these robots have rights? Because these people come to this park and they do basically whatever they want to them without no recourse of action. So I'll let you guys answer this, but if animals have rights, should robots? Well, now obviously killing your neighbor is clearly worse than poisoning a rat, but who makes up these rules? So do we look at this as robots aren't human? So technically they're not living things, so they're not suffering. Or do we look at it like, yeah, you know what? Like, here's the other thing. The founder of cybernetics, and this I'm going to geek out for a second, is Norbert Wiener. You guys might know that name. Even he said, and this is real. He's a real person. He invented this. This falls in with artificial intelligence. He cautioned human beings about the desire to be waited upon by intelligent machines. And the reason for this is because you want them to be your slaves. But the problem is they're so intelligent that they'll never be subservient. So the obvious problem is that somebody who's that intelligent can't possibly be or never will be submissive fully. So where do you guys fall on that?
See, I mean, I'll just go first really briefly. When you first asked me this question, I thought, yeah, it's fine because they don't have feelings. But the whole point of this show is that they're building a host to have feelings and to have consciousness. So it totally becomes a being. Mike, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I agree. It's mean, essentially, they are robots. They aren't real. But then, obviously, there's the element of they are so advanced that they won't become, well, they learn to feel, which in itself is an interesting debate. But also because you as a viewer also actually view them as real, I don't think you go through the series thinking, oh, Dolores is a robot or whoever's a robot. It's like you can just completely lose yourself and look at them as real people. And I think that's an interesting thing that they've done too.
You do feel sorry for her, don't you, every time?
Well, yeah, exactly.
The man in black
yeah.
comes in, you know, you do feel bad for her.
And yeah, and even when you know that they are hosts, you do get a sense that they do have genuine things because the AI is so advanced. But it's an interesting point whether you can sort of treat, I mean, essentially on a very basic level, it's do you treat robots the same as humans? And then on that very, I know it's a very dumbed down analogy of a, you know, comparison between the two. It's like, I think you've obviously got humans, you look after humans, and robots are essentially there to do whatever you need them to do to be subservient. But as you say, there comes a point where you get so advanced, and because you enjoy playing God so much, you want to make things as real as possible. And I don't know, I mean, if have you seen films like Ex Machina? Are quite interesting examples.
Great
of,
movie.
It's amazing. But that's an interesting example of
Terminator.
Yeah, Terminator 2. Yeah,
The flashbacks to the humanity dying from robots.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, no one can say that they, you know, you see Arnie do that, the thumbs up as he's going into the modern law, and it's like that's a touching moment.
Don't die.
I know you don't want him to go, but and it's you know, but when, in all these films, I think you always see it never seems to pan out well. And even things like The Matrix as well, AI has become so advanced, they end up taking over and they basically are trying to overtake and kill off the human race, basically. And that's, whether that's not, the thing is you don't know what the outside world is like in this world, in this Westworld timeline, because it's obviously set in the future. You don't know how far in the future
it is. It's dystopian, isn't it?
Exactly, and what is the outside world like? Is it anything resembling what we are now?
We've only seen a little bit, haven't we? We've only seen a little bit of when Maeve goes out, and that's it.
The funny thing about this show is that I can't remember. Usually, we're talking about things where humanity's getting overtaken, but in this show, you actually find yourself rooting for the artificial intelligence at the end of it.
Yeah,
and that's quite different than, and if you're not, then I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you.
But Joey, if you're not rooting, you know what I'd say the difference. What I'd say the difference is, right? Human being. I mean, it's you can die, okay, as a human being, but as a robot, you can be bought back. So there's a difference immediately in that. You know, when you say you're playing God, but just say like for example, they got shot. Yeah, they'd get stitched back up and put out again. Whereas as a human, you get shot in the head, man, you're done. That's it. So,
but here's the thing. It's not about, I hear what you're saying, and you're right. There's no questioning that. But when he, quote unquote, gives them awakening, and now they're a self-awareness, and he gives them a conscience, that's what makes you human. So at that moment, then how do you guys feel? Is that okay to do what they're doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, they become human beings once they have human emotions. You know, when she's getting raped, she feels fear. Mm-hmm. Artificial intelligence wouldn't necessarily, you can program it all you want, but I mean, he does that. He did it with Maeve. He did it with Dolores. And then Dolores unlocks everybody else. That was her maze. That was her end goal. And she did it. She finally did it. And it seems to me like they became human beings. So the second season is just going to be complete chaos. So.
But what you're actually going into here is pretty much what Arnold wanted from day one. And, and Dr. Ford didn't want. But then Dr. Ford turned it around.
Thought,
you know what, the last thing I do, because obviously you also know in this is that Dr. Ford knows he's getting old, knows that he's dying. He talks a lot about artists. He talks a lot about, you know, in the last scenes with Dolores, or Wyatt, by the way, whatever. He's talking about this painting. I can't remember the artist, but he's talking about the brain and how people didn't notice that for hundreds of years or whatever. And they leave a mark. They become, these names are now art, you know, they leave a mark, and he wanted to leave a mark. And he's trying to say that maybe what Arnold was saying about making these beings into something. This is what we're leaving behind. We're not the superior beings here. We have got to where we can. He even says this, doesn't he? We have got to where we can, but there's something else that can go further, that can do better than us. And I think he just realizes that it's time to let loose and let these things rule. And that's why he is actually trying to get the intel out as well. So it's very, very interesting, Joey. I think in the end, he's playing God a lot, but he's also trying to get them to let go. So,
I do think with the whole awakening aspect of AI, it obviously then becomes an ethical issue.
That's right.
I mean, that's what the whole show plays on, and it plays on your emotions, and it plays on what you deem ethically acceptable. But again, as what we've just discussed then, and in terms of what Ford's end goal is, what his real motivation is, because you seem to think you know these things as you go along, but then he comes in and he basically twists the narrative and goes down whichever path he chooses. And I think it does throw you a lot of time, so it just feels too clean that he's gone for good now. I think that we've got to learn more about him, something about how the first season ended. What is this, you know, I think we've just got to know more in the second season. But then again, it may just completely take us on another tangent in the second season. That's the beauty of it. You just don't know where the hell it's actually going to go.
I'm expecting war. I love war, like, in terms of TV. Not in real life, people. Do not quote me on that. I mean, as in the show, I think when there's, like, what's happening with Game of Thrones now, where there's a pending war coming, it's just so exciting. And I just think that if it's back against the walls for the humans, you might start feeling some empathy now, because obviously some of these AIs are going to be fucking nasty, you know, villainous, evil things. And that'll be good to have the other side. Like Joey just said, we're feeling more for the AI side. I think they might do a bit of a twist, because she might just now, Wyatt that is, become the villain of this and really take it to another level and start, you know, maybe even capturing people and stuff like that. And it just could be mental. They could go anywhere now with this, which is the beautiful thing.
There could be so many crossovers in terms of the parks, because when you see Westworld, you think, okay, this is basically, it's in disarray now. Well, what is the state of the Samurai Park? What is the state of these other parks? Have they had uprisings? Have they had narratives changed? So this kind of sort of chaos is happening there. You don't know what has happened in other...
Could they become Westworld versus Samurai Park and, like, oh my God, that is cool. Sorry.
I mean, it could be really, like, I mean, it could completely... The whole season two could completely tonally change to some sort of... I can't see it happening, but in terms of some sort of almost like a big war, basically. The West world versus Samurai world, or whatever other worlds. There's got to be inevitably some other worlds that will come in at some point and shake shit up.
And then in series 10, they take on the real world. Oh, wow. Sorry. You know what? Me and Jerry talked about this on WhatsApp, and I was quite a negative person on this show. But as I've gone back and watched, and I've watched more recap stuff, I got really excited about it again. And it's probably because it was just so long since I watched it, and I've watched so much in between that I've enjoyed, that I probably just wasn't as high. But you're probably listening to this and you're thinking, I'm like an excitable child at the moment. But okay, guys, I think we've done really well with this. Anything else you wanted to add before we finish? Last talking points on Westworld? Mike first, anything else?
Well, I mean, it's not said to do with the actual plot point here, but in terms of the series, because there's so many interesting reveals as it goes on, it was this kind of show that, unlike any other show that I watched before, I immediately wanted to go back and watch it again from the beginning, just knowing what I knew then. I haven't done. I mean, today I watched a bit of the final episode, but I'm really tempted to now go back and watch the entire season again with a whole different perspective. I think it would be really interesting. I think there'd be so many things you pick up on.
Oh, it's good.
Just very subtle things.
I've tried to watch some of it today, and like you just said, I picked up on that, the episode 9 at the end when, you know, the William bit. Mm-hmm. And now that I already knew what the reveal was, I just was like, "Oh, you cheeky shits!" They're just leaving.
And it's like the bit with the it's like the bit with it was about midway through the season. You see a photo of Ford, and Arnold looks on it, and on the photo, it's before you know, Bernard is Arnold. There's like a black on the right hand side, the little area on the right hand side, it's like there's no one stood there. And it's because obviously Bernard can't see himself in it. And I think unless you're really picking apart the plot and looking into theories at the time about what is happening, you don't tend to pick up on these things, and really, you know, these things don't click with you at the time. I think going back to watch it again, you'd be like, yeah, picking up on that, I know that, and I know why they're doing that, and I can see this perspective now. And just knowing the timelines, knowing the twists, and knowing who is a host and who, well, potentially isn't, that's the thing. You're left with so much paranoia. As soon as you learn Bernard is a host, you think, shit, who else is a host? Is everyone a host? You have no idea. You're so convinced Bernard is real, and then your whole reality is basically turned upside down. And I love that sort of paranoia with it all.
Fantastic. I totally agree with you. It's a good one to go watch again, as I've done some of it today. Joey, last words, anything from you?
The one thing is, I think we brought up Michael Crichton in the beginning, and obviously he did Jurassic Park. And you know, the big parallel between these two is basically like, just because, you know, we have the technology and the ability to do something mind-blowing, does that mean we should do it? You know, that's a big question of this whole show. That's probably been my number one question of this show. And I thought that, you know, I watched Jurassic Park recently, and I'm like, you know what? They do have a lot of parallels. Like, dinosaurs are great. Dinosaurs are awesome. But if dinosaurs go wrong, we're fucked. You know what I mean?
Dolores mentions dinosaurs. Do you know? She makes a reference to
them. Yes.
She does. She does make a very clever reference to Jurassic Park. Yep. Love it.
Yeah, and that was a big take of mine at the end of it. I'm like, yeah, you know what? That's like mind-blowing now that you think about it.
We are aware Michael Crichton did direct Westworld as well. Jurassic Park. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I've seen the original film, but I presume that would potentially spoil it.
Well, he wrote Jurassic Park too. I believe he wrote the book. So.
Yes, he did, and then he obviously directed and wrote Westworld, the obviously film. And I mean, have you guys seen the original Westworld film?
No, that's a really good point. I've not seen it either. No, I know a few people that have, but have you?
No, but I didn't want to spoil it for my spoiler series myself potentially, because I mean it is still based around, you know, how robots malfunctioning and causing havoc in a adult themed amusement park. But it might be interesting to go and sort of visit it potentially, and then
We could do that. We could do a preview before season 2 starts in 2018.
Yeah.
Get the band back together. This is the Westworld band now. But anyway, I just want to say a massive thank you to Joey and Mike made debut. It's very late at night to come on the show and do this with us. I thought it was a really good chat. Very, very good points from our view. We ended up really going on tangent stuff. That's exactly what we want to do. I think with Joey, we do that a lot, don't we, with Stranger yes. Things and the OA. We did that for both of those. So
I like to get people thinking. I that's what I try good. To do. And some people are like, I don't feel like listening to it. And then other people are like, oh, yeah, I like that idea.
We've been lucky, though, that there's the three shows like that in the last year, Stranger Things, the OA, yeah. Westworld, have all made you at the end go, what the hell? There's more to this.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike, thank you again, mate. Really appreciate that.
Pleasure
and
being
I'm
here.
I'm sure we'll get you back on and talk Liverpool on another pod.
Oh, yes.
But that's the end of the show. Let's get some quick plugs in. Mike, anything to plug, mate?
Nothing specific, but if anyone wants to follow me on Twitter, they can do at Mike_P_Williams, and you'll find various articles and rants on there.
Yes, plenty there that I reply to a lot as well. but okay, Joey, I'm sure you got loads to plug.
Yeah, I wrote 5 articles for the Comic Pod.
Wow.
And I know, Gags, you're probably asking, where the fuck are they? Stu and I have an agreement. When I write one, I give it to him and I let him read it, because him and I are big comic book guys. So you'll be seeing a lot of them really, really soon. I'm not going to ruin what they are. But I will say one is I did write one on Legion, which is out now. And I did X-23, which is also out, obviously tying in with the Logan, the Wolverine movie.
Okay, great. I'll go and check the geek section out. They'll probably be there somewhere. Okay, thank you again, guys. That, my friends, was the On The Box podcast. These violent delights have violent ends. See you next time.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.